Blog Talk Radio.
I walk the city streets on the boulevard of broken dreams. We're live. I'm pulling John in now. Greetings.
Well, hello, Holy Hammer, and how are you today?
A little out of sorts. How are you?
I'm living the dream, and it's brought me to Los Angeles. And
Thank God. Tonight,
the dream will lead me to moving a dog to stay at the Ritz-Carlton tonight, and then probably get home at 3 or 4 in the morning.
So you have to stay in a hotel with the dog?
I have to help them move temporarily. They're vacating the premises because tomorrow they're doing smoke alarm testing in the complex, and they don't want to offend the little hound's ears. So they're
you know what I'm... Bob was on the air and he just dropped. So let me text him, okay?
Yes, let's dog him.
Keep talking. Oh, here he is again. Hi, Bob. You dropped for a second. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm fine.
That's good. Tonight is kind of a I don't want to use the word liberal. But it's kind of an open-ended type sermonette or religious discovery. I was just going to use a quote from 1 John 2:9 through 11. The one who says he is in the light and yet hates his brother is in the darkness until now. The one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. So John and I were talking an hour before the show, and I'm going to keep the show kind of light in the beginning, and then I'm going to bring up what provoked me to do the show. But Bob, I was telling John that I was in the bathroom at McDonald's after a 12-hour work shift, and I was about to pick Lauren up, and I just ran into the bathroom quick. And I heard this lady kind of muttering, and then when she came out of the stall, she told me that her mother was killed by her own brother 5 months ago. And the woman said I could, after she talked to me for about a minute or two, she said, I could sense you were a Christian, and my family really needs prayer. And it just kind of like, we had already had a crazy day at work with one client acting up all day, and it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks that this person would approach me with such heavy news. And basically, that's not why I'm doing the show on those particular verses, but I just wanted to throw that in there.
There really is no appropriate place for heavy news. When you have something heavy happen to you, you have to express it, and there is no place that's soft and cuddly, and polite and whatever. You just have to, when you're experiencing that, yeah.
Yep,
there's
she
no
was a total
it.
Stranger, and as I was telling
right.
John, she was disoriented. Like,
yes.
Her clothes were kind of disheveled, her purse was unzipped, and I could tell she was still in an acute stage of grief. But before I pulled you in, I did kind of cut John off in the middle of his dog story. So, John, do you want to comment on the topic tonight or continue with your story?
Well, we can leave doggy land for a little bit because this is a very interesting subject, how people deal with these situations. I mean, here you've got a person whose brother, I believe, right, has killed the mom. So, I mean, how do you restore the relationship? Where do you go from there? And what's your, wow, I mean, that is just so
well,
intense.
I didn't have time. I only had time to Google his mugshot. But I didn't have time to really look into the story. And Duluth has a population of 86,000. So the fact that it happened here, is a little unusual. So,
why?
I mean, it doesn't happen here every day. It might happen in L.A. every day, but not here.
I did have one friend up in Sacramento who, their best friend, the brother killed the mom and the grandmother. It was kind of over drugs. He would stay at the house, and he was kind of bumming around, living in a van. And one day he kind of freaked out, probably the drugs, and he killed the mom and the grandmother. So what was difficult is she had to go to the trial over two or three years, show up and go relive all these events, with all the narratives. And how do you forgive your brother? How do you move on? How do you go forward? What do you say to him? You say, well, I guess we learned something from that, And I think it happened even like around Mother's Day or something like that. So it's one of those deals where every year she has to go through this. I guess most people grieve for a year or a couple of years. And some people grieve the rest of their life. But I guess you have to find a process at some point when you want to plug back into life and move forward. And I think for most people, that's one of the hardest things to do. How do you move forward from that or a divorce or, loss of a child, stuff like that. Incredibly painful.
Yeah. Before Bob jumps in, I'm just going to say he was 37. His name was Carmen Mosqueda. And basically, he went straight to the police station and admitted he killed his mother. And she was 71. And some neighbor said, she always petted my dog. Like I said, it's a very tragic, sad day for us in the neighborhood. And he had no previous charges. So it actually happened. It was reported to have happened on my birthday.
What?
But I'm sure you guys see weird things. Like Bob walks to McDonald's quite a bit in our neighborhood. You guys probably see all off-the-wall things every day, but I was already a little shaken this week because I had emailed Ernest after 1 year of being off his radio network, and he spiritually attacked me again. So the name of our show tonight is called Purging Carnal Haters of Darkness and Following the Light. And Bob, I believe I read the thing while you were not on the air. It's 1 John 2, 9 through 11. It's the segment in the Bible about hating how people can hate others, but then they expect to be part of the family of God. And I really don't know how to deal with people who continue to, when you're trying to be nice to them, they attack you.
You know, I think just the way we are, the way our souls, our spirits, our personalities are, whatever, you know, sometimes you need time to recover. And you don't have, I think that, to make the statement that you have to be recovered immediately and do the best thing you could possibly do, you have to do that immediately, is not consistent with human, you know, human, with how we're set up. I think the statement
is, are you talking about
in
healing
in
a, from a crisis or healing from a broken relationship?
Right. Either. You know, I think that it takes just time to recover from things. And the statement in 1 John that you read a little earlier, in my opinion, there are scriptural statements.
Parallels?
Talk about the situation, but that verse is not one of them. The Gospel of John was primarily intended to address Jewish Christians who rejected Pauline Christianity, and that's what I'm talking about the Gospel of John now. You have to understand this when you're reading the Gospel of John.
Well, this is First John.
First John presumably goes back to John, so it still is a First John may possibly also be written with the Ebionites in mind, not with average Christians in mind.
I just wanted to point something out. The Greek word for brother or sister is adelphos. And when they're talking about brother and when they're talking about brother or sister in verse 10, it refers to the believer, just part of the family, not a biological brother or sister.
Right.
John.
I think what makes this a little different is, I think kind of the wording there, to me, it seems a little bit generic, like, well, hey, you say you're a Christian, but you hate your brother. You know, you go down the store, you have someone you would deal with regularly, and you have a disagreement, and you hate him. And he's saying, you know, you can't say you love God and still walk in darkness. I think in your situation, you knew this person for, what, 20, 25 years or whatever?
25 years.
That's at least half a lifetime. And really, when you figure throughout the first 20 years of your life, because you're growing up and, you know, just being, you know, a kid, so really your whole adult life, you know, or the majority of it, you've known Ernest. And so I think this is more a situation of, in a relationship, you have to accept certain flaws with people. Some things you want to change, but generally you have to love people unconditionally. And there comes a point in a relationship, if it's long-term, where you come to the conclusion, this is how they are, or this is what they are, and I either accept it, or if I can't deal with it, be perpetually disappointed or upset or frustrated. I think that was more the case. To continue on the same path, either he had to accept the entity of who is Jane or not deal with it. Just, you know, just walk away from it, and or at least temporarily walk away from it. And I think that's a little bit more the situation. I think in a way.
You know, the turning point for me was it wasn't so much that it ended, but how it ended. Like, he just decided that John and I were basically the two most affected. That he just decided, boom, John and Jane are going on a hiatus. He didn't ask us. He told us. And then he invited John to come on his network at some point. But the thing that made me wary, Ernest and I had a rift when his friendship with Marguerite dissolved, a black woman that he had lived with. And I gave him a second chance even after he burned her. He had rung up a $1,200 phone bill in her house, and once time with my sister, $300. So I had given him more than one chance. But in the back of my mind, I knew that there would always come a day again where he might burn me, because that's been his pattern. And I collected four of his friends on Facebook who he burned over the years in the radio business. So it was something I was already familiar with. But when I wrote him this last time, a year had elapsed, and I was just basically writing to tell him I'm doing okay. I made it through my legal problems pretty much unscathed with not much damage. And I'm doing all right, and I realize you disappointed me and I disappointed you. But I'm okay. And I didn't try to make amends. I didn't say, I'm sorry, let's patch things up. I just wrote him a nice email. And then he name-called me on his blog, which I really had no business checking again.
Right. And I think, so kind of what you stated from your narrative, he previously has dealt with other people in that way. As far as being cold and, you know, maybe shutting things down, or at least, or acting in his best interest, I'll put it that way. So in a certain way, he's being consistent. So the question is, you kind of know this is the nature of how he is with other people. Is there any reason to be surprised or to not expect him to continue in the same consistent manner? And, you know, can you deal with that?
I'm just going to make one more comment, and then I'm going to ask Bob a question. You know, I don't have a savior complex like I used to in my early 30s, or maybe my 20s, or even back when I wanted to be an evangelist as a teenager. But the thing is when you know, there's certain things about Ernest's life I know where someone really tried to hurt him, like his parents who weren't there for him. And I've tried to show him in every way I could that I could be his friend even through the hard times. But instead of, when someone shows him love, he lashes back. And I was going to ask Bob, just because Bob is part of the show, and I already know a lot of John's history. Bob, have you ever been in either a friendship or a personal relationship with someone that you just kind of stuck in there because you knew that person might have needed you or you needed them, but it wasn't maybe particularly that good for you. But then you just kind of try to extend an arm because you're a Christian and you wanted not to abandon that person. Have you ever been in that situation?
I'm sure, yes. Don't ask me for specifics. But, yeah, that's the kind of thing that I would do. So I'm sure it's happened.
Well, John has been like, for example, I've known John now 14 years, believe it or not, and I'll use John as a live example. Like, you know, I've known him for many years. He's seen me do one or two stupid things, but he didn't see me really do something really stupid till last year when I got into some legal problems. But he didn't try to judge me or he didn't crack jokes, and he even borrowed me money a couple times and I paid him back. Even though I still owe him $8 right now. But the thing is just, like, there's another lady in my church named Vicki Dean that she used to be the counselor at First Baptist of Beverly Hills for the women's support group. And, like, I mean, the Christians that you know you really can depend on, it's a no-brainer. But it's those extra people on the peripheral that you want to kind of, that you've developed a relationship, but you don't really want to let them go. But on the other hand, you don't mind being their friend, even though they have some flaws. Like, Ernest was extremely sarcastic, but he was also funny. But we didn't have a really big stake in our friendship. But on the other hand, I sunk $500 or $600 when I took him to Janet Jackson at Radio City, a music hall in New York. And I also paid for his roommate's ticket in 2011. So I don't know, it's effed up. Now, I know John's been burned in his divorce, but you can't really give when expecting to get something back. So, John, could you use an example in your life?
Oh, yeah, all the time. In fact, I think with all relationships, you just have to come to a point of you, if people love you, they accept you, it's kind of like, it's icing on the cake. I think what we deal with, one of our biggest problems is we think we have a lot of time with our life. We think our lives are, you know, eternal practically on this planet. And what I find is that there's a million, billion other people out there. I could never meet them all. And some of them are some really cool people. And a lot of times we just kind of bang our heads against the same five or six people our whole life. And there's no forward momentum. Like, there's no energy or excitement. It's like if people are flowing with you, stuff happens, and it's good energy. So I would encourage, you know, anyone who's in a situation, you've had a long-term relationship and the other person doesn't really want to reconcile it or they want to hold on to grudges, I would just say, you know, the time is short. Embrace life. Whatever life you have left, spend it loving, sharing, and giving, and not holding on to the past. Because the past is just, it's when you look at it like 100 years from now, what will it really matter? I think what will matter are the things that we've done in love, in God. And some people, I think what happens is we get hurt that someone doesn't accept us or they haven't forgiven us or they don't. I mean, that's what we're, our whole life about is relationship to God, broken relationships, trying to reconcile it, and trying to reconcile it with each other. But some people don't want that. And I think there's a point where we just have to say we respect that. You know, like don't invest in a bad account. You know, it's an investment that's not going to turn for you.
Yeah, I think I can think of a good example between me and Bob. But before I, that was excellent advice, John. I was just going to make one more comment. You know, I'm not in the business of having to save Ernest anymore. I know that he's financially struggled for years, but he somehow manages to get what he wants. But as far as like, he's basically spends a big chunk of money on entertainment. But basically, you know, I'm not really hurt. I'm just kind of shocked at myself that, like, I did the same thing twice and I got the same result. But Bob and I had a landlord in our building who I won't say his name, but he's burned a few people. He's told exaggerated fibs to. He's tried to come across as a womanizer, but yet he has a Christian mantra on his door. And he got married in the Philippines 2 or 3 years ago, but then he ended up sleeping with another tenant. And he talked about his Christianity and his salvation to me, but then he's done. I'm not judging him. I'm just saying that some of his testimony is controversial. But something happened in the building. Like four apartments were inoculated with bed bugs, and it was Lauren's birthday, and I took him to Disneyland. And the day the sprayers were supposed to come in, my friend Tim and I, we made the apartment the best way we could. We moved things away from the wall. We packed things in the middle. We did about 60% of what the sheet said to do, but then it was canceled. And then the landlord had a hissy fit, and he was bad-mouthing me and around the whole building. But at this point, I had already given my notice in from Minnesota. But my friend Greg below me told me that, yeah, your name was mud today, the way this dude was talking about you. And this guy is a bona fide schizophrenic. He had the paperwork to prove it, but yet he still sometimes worked on movie sets, like as a extra production person. But he was just like a colorful, controversial person, but he was the kind of person that could burn you in an instant and be your friend the next. So, I mean, that's just kind of a fuzzy example, but I'm just going to show that some people just aren't able to be consistent with how they treat people.
And you have to keep in mind, Jesus was perfect, and what did people do to him? They crucified him. You know, what are they going to do to people that are imperfect? And we are imperfect people. I think it comes down to you have to be able to resolve the issue. And if you can't come to agreement, you have to walk away from it. Or otherwise, I mean, that's what ISIS is all about, and Muslims and Christians and Jews fighting. It's not finding that place of acceptance and tolerance and to move forward. So in the end, you know, it's fighting and killing and destruction. Now, in your case, it's not fighting and killing. It's just it's a cold war, basically. And you want to
I expected more from Ernest after all these years. I expected him to overcome his hatefulness and spite. Because he really has... I remember he wrote a blog shortly after our first falling out. And he said something like, it wasn't a matter of me disliking her. It was a matter of me just walking away. I can't remember, you know, but... You know, really, if you really want to listen to a person and you have the listening capabilities, then you can see that their need for sincerity if they're expressing themselves to you. But like you said, John, if people aren't willing to receive that, even though I didn't burn him directly, he was just disappointed in me, there's not much else I can do.
No, and I run into this a lot with people. I'll give you an example. Last week, one of the pastors was talking to a member of the church, and we kind of discussed this, and basically there's parking at the church because it's right next to this college. Well, people that are involved in the church or members can park at the church parking lot, but anyone else, I mean, they don't want, I mean, there's 10,000 students probably going to Santa Monica or 5,000. Everyone would want to park at the church free. So they told a student like that they could, that was going to the church, they could park there. For whatever reason, the staff didn't know, and so they basically told them they couldn't park there. So this church member representing the child comes up to the pastor and says, "You didn't, you know, relay information. You said it was going to be okay, and it wasn't." And he started getting mad. He said, "No, I did everything right. It wasn't my fault." And they started pushing and fighting, I mean, ready to go to blows. Over this, and we're like, they're speaking in Korean, so we don't understand what's going on. All we know is that this isn't cool. They're fighting over what? We had no idea. And later, when we found out it's parking space, it's like you're ready to fight over a parking space, like
in California.
You know,
that's a bona fide reason to fight.
Right. So
no,
kind of
I'm joking.
No,
that is inappropriate for church members to do that.
Yeah, you know, for any reason, I mean, unless it was like a life and death situation. But the point is, you're going to have people like that where you have to be able to tell yourself, can I walk away? The other person's putting energy and pressure on me. Do I have enough self-restraint to be as calm as possible and just ignore, you know, or move forward or pray for them? So I think in the end, it kind of comes back to us, you know, that are offended. Can we find a way to move forward, you know, in a positive way? And not that it's your fault, but, you know, are you able to resources and find, you know, resolution within yourself?
Yeah, I am. I just, as a Christian, and I know several of Ernest's relatives, you know, I felt like it was worth one more shot, not so much for resolution, but just to clear the air, but, Bob, why don't you comment a couple of minutes? Like, you have a nice roommate, and sometimes you and her have power struggles, so maybe you could comment on how you guys sustain your friendship through those difficult times.
No, we don't sustain our friendship through those difficult times. We are, during those times, we are mortal enemies. I'm only teaching. I think you know, it's
I wasn't trying
to
put you on the spot, but I've seen you guys. You guys are an interesting pair.
Yeah, well, you can't ask me a very personal question like that when I'm only like literally 3 feet from the person that you're talking about, and to do this on national radio. You know, I'm gonna decline to answer the question.
I thought you were gonna say I'm gonna clobber you. Well, what I'm trying to do is I'm not trying to have me and John monopolize the show. So could you put your two cents in a different way?
For this program, you're free to monopolize it. Yeah, this is not a subject that I'm particularly involved in.
Okay, well, I'm glad that your life is so peaceful that you never have conflict.
I think
that's not at all what I said.
I think we call it the path of least resistance.
Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, I think Bob chose the path of least resistance, and men have learned this. Women, in general, I'm speaking in general, I'm generalizing, they vocalize, they talk out their stuff. Men, not so much. We're of less words. They did a survey, a study of children, and they found kids, you know, like on the playground, 80% or so or 90% of what women did was, girls would do was talk and vocalize. And about 80% of what the guys would do is just like yelling and sound effects and, you know, action noises and things like that. And that's kind of the nature of things. So I think what men tend to do is we just say, yes, dear, okay, dear. We kind of move along. We don't really want to confront or get into stuff. And
I think that's 2-1 point, but I worked with a guy today who talked my ear off.
There are exceptions to this. There are. So I think that's just kind of the nature of the relationship. You know, women tend to internalize things a little bit more as far as, and they let it out by talking, and guys internalize things, and we keep it there. We do it through our work or through, you know, activities. So,
okay, well, we have 15 minutes left, and I want to tell you guys another story. So I was at work tonight, and I asked a guy, what was the three biggest moments of truth in your life? Now, you have to realize he's only 24 years old. Well, he told me he spent a lot of time saving money between age 16 to 24, and he had $5,000 hidden in his shoebox, and he had two roommates. And actually, one day when he was on a long shift at work, his apartment got robbed. They were going for crackheads next door, and his apartment got robbed, and his two roommates got beat up. The money was stolen, and they scared the dog so bad the dogs pooped in the apartment. But the strange thing about the story is that except for them going to the hospital because one person was beaten badly, they never pursued a police case. And his answer was, what's the point? The two people who were beat up couldn't remember what the guy looked like, and they basically didn't believe that justice would be served, so they just let it go. So my question is to you and Bob is, if you had the shit beaten out of you or someone in your apartment, you had $5,000 cash stolen, would you report it to the police?
I think the first thing I would do is I think I would find a better place to hide the money. Second of all, probably get better friends. But yeah, I think I would report it, you know. I would. Some people want, though, you know, maybe too much of a it may cause more problems, open up more problems than it's worth, you know.
Well, I looked at it as a black-white thing. Oh, go ahead, Bob.
You know, you know, these are very personal questions. I can't participate in this kind of a conversation. You know, I apologize.
Okay, we'll let you go then.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay, bye. John? Why was that personal question? Why was that a personal question?
I think while you were explaining the story, I think he was being asked some questions or might have been discussing something in his room. So I think he missed the whole story. So I think you were kind of – he probably thought you were still asking in regards to his relationship or things at home. So I think he was just caught in the middle. You know, sometimes someone talks to you in the middle of a conversation, you don't hear the whole thing. And when they ask you a question, you think that they're asking you a question about your personal life. I think that's what happened there.
Okay, well, basically, this is, I didn't want to get into the whole story because we only have, I'm going to give you time to do your wrap up. Basically, my friend is black. He moved from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which has had a lot of economic problems over the last several years. And he's only 24, so for him to save $5,000 was a big deal. I agree with you that he should not have left the money. I think it was in the living room, and he said he had it in a Michael Jordan box with, you know, like the Air Jordan box. And the robber was probably just tempted to look in the box just because of that.
Just to get
He wasn't home at the time. He got home 10 to 15 minutes after the robbery took place. So he partly blamed himself because he couldn't get a hold. His sister was the one who was beaten up the worst, and he also had two roommates. They were not crackheads. The person who beat him up mistook them for the house next door. So they were innocent. They were just average citizens who got dogged. And basically, you know, I guess the story shocked me because he was cavalier about the fact that they didn't report it.
Yeah, I
guess
kinda,
the police.
I was going to say, I think it kind of comes down to if you're willing to put $5,000 in a shoebox and you share with and you live in a place with other people, you have to be willing to lose that money because it can disappear pretty easy. Not a really secure place to put it. And even if his friends didn't bring it, I mean, didn't do it, you know, didn't participate. Sometimes, like in my life, people may come to visit me, right? Or Slick may have some friends visit. Or you could have anything, you know, the electrician guy, the gas dude, the postal man, whatever. People walk into your residence or friends visit, the unexpected, or relatives, and so if you're sharing a place with someone, you're going to put that kind of valuable out there, not secured, you're just taking a big risk. So it sounds like that person was not working with a full deck of cards, maybe. And I'm not saying
I think
I've never
he was
had...
too trustworthy, because I said if you have $5,000, couldn't you have at least hid it in a better place?
Right. That's kind of the thought. It's like, you know, they say a fool and his money are easily parted. I think he has to take some responsibility for that. And, you know, granted, not that it's his fault, but we can do things that contribute to being ripped off by making ourselves an easy mark. So now if this is the first time it happens, like, hey, that's bad news. If he puts himself in that situation again, I would definitely say you're asking for it. You know, because anyone over 18 or 20, you've been out and lived on your own for a couple years.
Well, he's still young, and he said that those three people left the area after that. One is in second year law school. The other person's doing better than they ever have in their lives. And the other person, I think he said he's just moved to Minneapolis and has been with his girlfriend for a year. So I guess in the long run, you know, like, he said that other guy and him were texting. They text all the time, and that day the guy didn't text him back. And he had a sixth sense that there was something wrong, but he didn't follow on his belief that something was really bad. He just trusted that everything was going to be okay. So
go ahead. I was going to say,
I have dealt with difficult subject matter tonight, and I did just text Bob and tell him, you know, I'm really sorry that you kind of misunderstood the last scenario, but these are the kind of shocking things I've had to deal with today. I'm not trying to qualify them by any sense.
Oh, yeah. Well, this gets down to the nitty-gritty of relationships and understanding people and forgiving them and dealing with them. But I was going to say, in regards to the last story, it basically, if you're not that concerned about, if you're really concerned about your money, you're going to wrap it up and take better care of it. And if not, you really can't, life is going to teach you a lesson. I'll put it that way. And it's not going to be, you know, very easy. It'll teach us in a harsh way. And hopefully he'll learn. I mean, I guess he could have lost a whole lot more money. But definitely.
If they had insurance, apartment insurance or renter's insurance, he might have been able to salvage it. But it would have been hard to prove he had $5,000 in a shoebox.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, put it in the mattress? I don't think so, but some people, you know, I have friends that they go out and they buy a safe, you know. Just find a way, you know. Of course, there are things called banks, but I'm sure he probably was hiding it from, you know, maybe he had school loans or was trying to qualify for something and he can't have any money. So maybe that was the reason, you know, he put it in the shoebox. But just,
I guess, the last thing I want to say is we have 5 minutes left. I feel like I did this show about someone who I wasn't getting along with, and then I made someone on the show feel alienated. So I think I'm 0-2. But mine's follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless you're following your foot into your mouth and you have foot and mouth disease.
Nice. I think you're right. Follow the truth where it leads you, especially if it's in a bank, to put your money so people don't steal it from you. You know, I sure hope he learned, though, a good lesson from it and, you know, find a little better way to manage. I mean, there's bigger things in life you can lose, but $5,000, wow. That's definitely a kick in the pants.
I told him that I've never even lost $20, and if I did, I'd be pissed.
Yes.
I mean, I have lost $20 in the casino, but I've never dropped $20 on a street. Or nobody's ever tried to rob me.
Right.
But basically, I guess I want to end this in a prayerful note. Like, I've learned my lesson of putting my finger back into the electric socket, but I guess the things, every day we have situations where we have to, we face where things either wash away or get built up and edified. And I feel like I can definitely know who my friends are and value the things in my life that are important. How about you?
Well, I was going to say with people, I talked to someone today, you know, it was Margaret, and, you know, she basically, her mom had a house worth a couple mil by the ocean over in, you know, Santa Monica, California. And what happened, she didn't get any part of the inheritance. The lawyers got it. But long story short is all the lawyers are dead. She's, I don't know, in her, you know, 70s or 80s. And it's like when you start thinking about people losing money or ripping off people, then it all fades away. Whether you're, you know, Caesar or the king of Syria or whatever, you know, the president of the United States, 100 years from now, that will pass. And so
I always think of Johnny Cochran and Robert Kardashian. They were part of the Dream Team. Johnny Cochran's life ended just like that. A few years after the trial, and Robert Kardashian died of cancer. They were two big shots whose life ended abruptly.
Right. And in the end, it's like, well, what's left is, you know, the memories of people that they have of you, how you were, your character. And then in the bigger picture, it's what God really thinks of you and what things you work for eternal riches. So that's kind of the thought I want to leave with this. Is invest in, not in earthly temporal things, you know, if possible, but try to invest in long-term spiritual eternal things. And
that was an excellent point, John. You did a great job tonight. That was an excellent point. So
Yay.
So when I leave you my $20,000 in my will, remember me for my character, not my money.
Yeah, I will. We'll go out and I'll donate it to homeless people who have shoeboxes. They put the shoeboxes and hand them out. They'll say thanks.
And by
to
the
these
way, you'll be By the way, you'll be Lolo's guardian.
Yes. And they'll say, thank you for these Air Jordans. And I go, what? You're only giving us money? We want the